Hi, I'm Pam Myers, producer of Lip Service, a podcast of our coming out stories. I came out later in life, and like many of the storytellers on our podcast, I had no role model and nowhere to look to find support and learn what it was like to come out. So I created this podcast to support our LGBTQ+ community, to inspire and foster connection, create empathy, and record our coming out stories for our history. I invite you to listen to these sometimes emotion-provoking and always inspiring stories. Please share with your community, and if you're up for it, you can sign up to share your coming out story. Use the calendar link on our website, lipservice.media. Thanks so much for listening. We appreciate you. Thanks for your support. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Lip Service, a podcast of our coming out stories. I am your host, Pam Myers, and I am here today with Unique Simmons. Unique is coming to us from Houston, Texas, and I am so glad to have you on as a guest. Unique, thanks for joining.
Thank you so much for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. It takes a certain amount of bravery to share your life story with the world, right? Not everybody is comfortable doing that. So I'm thrilled that you're here today. Are you born and raised in Houston?
No, I'm actually born in Brooklyn, New York. Spent my early childhood years in Brooklyn. And then we moved to Augusta, Georgia for a few years to take care of my grandmother. And then from Augusta, Georgia, we moved to Doswell, Virginia, which is a small town next to King's Dominion. Most people know about King's Dominion. And my great grandmother lived there. And so she lived to be about 100. And we, really planted some seeds there. And then I moved to Maryland to start my educational journey. So I did my undergrad there. So I recently moved to Houston about 5 years now. I say recently because Texas itself is such a bitch, a large state.
Right.
Houston, I feel like, is even larger because we can drive an hour and a half and still be in Houston. So,
right. All right. Yes, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah. The same for I lived in Dallas for a long time. And same thing, right? Yep, I getcha. So how we're in all of that journey, did you come out?
Yeah, my coming out story, really, I remember as far back as like 5 or 6, just having a very strong connection to my babysitter, like had like the crush on her, which was my cousin aunt at the time. She was much older. And, I played sports. So I was always around women all the time, whether it was through sleepovers, working out. And I knew that even though I played against the boys sometimes, there wasn't the feeling was just different in terms of like how I engaged. And so, my mom just recently, I want to say it was maybe in 2020, because we all spent a lot of time like building these relationships, while we were quarantined and in the way. And she was like really upset about not having a coming out experience. And she called me out of the blue and she was like, hey, I just want to know, one of her friends had posted something on Facebook about, celebrating their child coming out. And it was like a anniversary reflection. And she was like, she felt robbed of that experience in a way. And we chuckled about it. And I'm like, Mom, well, One thing I want you to walk away with is that you provided a level of comfort for me not to be closed in anywhere. You know, this was more, I was already out in the sense of just showing up as myself every day and feeling supported. So give yourself a pat on your back for, you know, being such a cool mom and being accepting at such an early age, whether that was shown through the way that I dressed and her trying to find the latest jerseys or the latest hats that I wanted to wear backwards. She's always, you know, has been my biggest supporter and cheerleader in that way. And so I think for her, it's more of like an education component, just really understanding that everybody's journeys looked different and parent-child relationships are important when people are really wanting to express their identity if they haven't been able to do so as a child. And so I would say, you know, she's all my parents, both they've always known my dad. I would say I was, you know, in his eyes, the son that he always wanted because he had three girls. And he would also just take pride in dressing me like him and, you know, me just being comfortable with that as well, because my sisters would never wear boots and a plaid shirt. Right. So him being able to, you know, live out whatever dream he may have had in terms of being able to, you know, dress one of his kids to kind of mimic his style. He was able to live that through me. And so my family has always been close-knit, even as a child. And as an adult, very accepting with my choices in terms of how I've built out my family and my relationships. And so my coming out story is one that I take pride in. And, you know, as I reflect on my 13-year-old who's navigating her identity, I hope that I'm half of what my mother was to me, where I can continue to create spaces where she's comfortable to be and stay what she feels she is.
Right, right. Wow. What I want to say unique, but what a fantastic experience and nurturing and loving experience that you had. That is just so wonderful. What a great mom and a great dad that you had. It sounds like that you just were able to live your true self and nobody objected or questioned or anything like that. I mean, that is such a, it's a not common, right? We know how.
Yeah, it's not common. And I'm an 80s baby. So it was very, you know, I don't want to paint the picture that all things were peachy. Mm-hmm. I just had such a solid foundation at home that, you know, I remember being at a Burger King in Virginia. And one of the associates there had misgendered me and served, and I didn't take any offense to it. But my mom was like so livid, like she was just wanting to protect me, if you will, you know. And so I say that to say that, like, knowing that I had that level of like support and advocacy so early on did allow me to take on the world in a very different way. That it made me more bold because I do live a very conservative lifestyle compared to my friends and some other peers in my community. Mm. But it has set me up for success as a parent. And of course, I didn't know that before I had my child, but I think all of the seeds that were planted through my family's foundations equipped me for being the type of parent that I am for my child, because that relationship and this current experience is quite different from my mom's and I's.
Right. Yeah. Talk about that. So can you think about that a little bit more? Because I think this is. Yeah,
for sure. So my best friend in college, who's a gay man. We both were married to our own separate partners, and we decided to have a child. And at that time, early 2010s, you know, that wasn't as open or accepted. Like, there was no gender reveals back then. You know, I was just telling my daughter that. I was like, girl, that's a new thing. That's like new. But and so, you know, at the time, that was important for me to set up my life as much as I could as how my parents provided for me. And, you don't know what you don't know. And I hadn't really thought about what I would do or how I would feel and what I would say if my child were anything. Right. And when she, I would say around sixth grade, which is normal in child development, you know, that she started to explore her identity. She's always wanted to dress like me. So she was wearing bow ties at 6 and 7, coming in my closet, getting those out. And we have videos of her putting on boots and a button up. And so we shared the same ideal of like, she just wants to be just like me. Mm-hmm. When she reached the sixth grade, we had just moved to Houston, and at her elementary school, there was a current petition for gender neutral restrooms.
Mm-hmm.
On one day, and she was like, Ma, you know, they're one of her friends were fighting this cause for gender neutral restrooms. And I am an activist at heart. So anytime I have the opportunity to help support the community, I'm also showing up. Mm-hmm. And so I met with the parent. We showed up the next day and we're bringing in the principal and we're doing all the protocols to fight for either a gender neutral restroom or a space, which we landed at the counselor's office. They had their own restroom, and we reconverted that one to the gender neutral. And so we were wildly successful. I mean, we came in on the back end of it, but we were just wildly happy that that was something that the school and administration at the time allowed us to put forth for those young children. Going into seventh grade, we started having conversations around trans and what that meant for my child, Blake. And so we explored different pronouns. And quite honestly, I was not as maybe open immediately as my parents. But that was the guilt that I kind of navigated through in my own therapy session around, like, how could I not be as open and as like jumping right to the support model, because that's what I've come from. And right. So I did struggle with that internally. And what I love about my child the most is that she really applies a grace. We started going to the library. We was reading a book called The Tea, which, again, someone like me that has been in this lifestyle since 5 or 6, you know, I would think to myself, you know, you should know these things, right? Like, these are people in your community. Why don't you know? And the honest truth is that I didn't. Like, mm-hmm. I'm the only person amongst my core group that has a child. You know, all of my friends that are a part of the LGBTQIA plus community, they don't have kids. And mm-hmm. So I really didn't have a parent whose experience was similar enough to mine to even lean on or ask a question. So, and then my other friends who have children, they just don't have the same lifestyle. And so their views are a little bit more traditional based on their upbringing. And with their support of me as just their friend, they're just like, Star, whatever, you know. And that's what my friends call me, Star. They're like, Star, whatever Blake wants to do. You're like, you're the cool mom anyway. So like, you're going to just get on board. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I keep telling myself too. But it's a challenge for me to like truly get there.
Right.
And so we went to family therapy together, not because of the identity, but more so because of the way that I was feeling with wanting to ensure that Blake felt accepted, whether that's asking questions like, okay, should I be correcting other people that are misgendering you? Is that something that you want to then correct? Understanding that child identity is also a part of child development. So there is, we went through a lot of that. Seventh grade, her pronouns at the time was he and him. And so I wrote a letter to all the teachers and I'm like, this is what we need to do. I'm correcting myself in real time. Halfway through the school year, her pronouns changed to they and them. And then I had to like put a pause and then she changed friend groups. So it was like seventh grade really stressed me out. Like if I can be completely transparent, I was so stressed out, so like questioning my own thoughts and beliefs. And it was just really a process for me. But then I had to think about what that experience was like for her, because if I'm going through all of this, I'm sure, you know, it's magnified from her lens. And so with each experience of her identities phase in the seventh grade, we just learned to roll with the punches. Me and her other mom, we would text through and just have conversations on where Blake was and some check-ins with that. And because and this is a very personal thing, but I do think it's important because of the way that Blake was navigating her identity, you know, she did attempt suicide. And her friend who we fought for the gender neutral bathrooms had also attempted suicide 3 months prior. And so after connecting with the parents and then talking to some of the therapists, there was some correlation there with, you know, Blake feeling isolated and not connected enough to the trans community, but then also not connected enough to lesbian. And then not also feeling like, you know, I want to be a little bit of both. And so that was really hard because it went from, you know, joy, laughter, we're reading books together, having a conversation about phases. And that was never anything that was presented to me. My mom never said that I was in a phase, you know, of my life about anything. And when I found myself thinking about phases, that's when I started to feel guilty about like, why am I putting that on my child? This is, you know, how Blake feels. And it started to like seep up. So seventh grade was tough. We got professional help to help us kind of navigate like some coping skills, identity. Talking about. And then we did summer break and eighth grade came around. We shifted schools and it has been a completely different world. Blake identifies as a girl. Her pronouns are she, her, and they. We checked in about her trans experience, what that was like about for her. You know, is that something that she's still so we're still actively having the conversations, but I don't know if today I still can't tell you how we got to where we are. I can just say that the experience today seems more comfortable for Blake. But I also, the school that she goes to, she also sees women that look just like little girls that look just like her. So they're dressing like her. Their skin looks like hers. Like she feels like there's some sort of like identity connection there. Right. And you know, her second week of school, she came home and she was like, Mom, the friends at my lunch table are calling me a studiana. And I said, well, what is that, Blake? And she was like, you don't know what a stud is? And it's like slang for, you know, a more masculine or dominant woman. And I was like, oh, you know, just act like, I don't know what that is. Tell me more, you know. And she was just so proud to be like, you know, I don't have to be super masculine. I can be, you know, and although I've been telling her this since day one, hearing it from her friends opened up this other portal of thinking. And now she's just like, you know, I'm a lesbian, mom. And I'm like, okay, great. You know, and I'm like, well, what does that mean for you? And she was like, well, you know, I like girls and I just don't like wearing certain clothes. I do feel comfortable in this. And I also don't feel like I have to be super masculine. I can be masculine and presenting, but it was just such an intellectual conversation with a 12-year-old at that time that I said to myself, time will reveal all things. Like not trying to rush as a parent to solve, you know, the identity crisis, if you will. And when I say identity crisis, not in a negative sense, but we all have gone through just self-identity exploration. Like that is a normal part of child development. And so not trying to solve for that, in hindsight, is like, okay, now we're going into ninth grade in the fall. This could be another experience for her. And who knows, maybe we, as we continue to explore internally, there may be other things about herself that she wants to bring out. And that might look different than her current state. And I'm okay with that. You know, like it's not as much pressure with me trying to champion everything, like coming in as the hero, if you will, with trying to like get behind it with all my might, but more so saying, okay, great. Like we're good. And then if tomorrow we're not good and it's something different, then I'm also okay with that too. So parenting is tough.
Yeah.
And it's tough.
Parenting is, and nobody tells you how, not that we would have listened at that age anyway.
Right.
Nobody tells you like parenting is really super hard. You're going to make a gazillion tons of mistakes. You're going to feel guilt. You're going to feel anger. You're going to feel frustration. It is, yeah, not for this light of heart at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then to go through and to be supportive, I mean, after everything that you went through, and then to watch your daughter and to go through those experiences with her, right? I mean, that's what a full circle challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was.
And how is life now? I mean, you kind of touched upon that a little bit, but how is life now for the two of you in Houston with everything that's going on?
Yeah. Life is good. You know, for me, what always comes to mind, and I believe this is what most parents, it's just safety. There's such an innocence in a 13-year-old, and she's a true 13. Like she's still green and she still has like that naive on her shoulder. And, you know, safety comes to mind for me first as a little Black girl. You know, she's small and framed, who is very bold in her beliefs, because when we were navigating the trans experience in seventh grade, she was literally walking up to people and saying, my name is, and I am trans. Like that was her introduction. And you know, she came to me one and I told her, I was like, you can't like do that. And she was like, why? Because mom, you're so Black and you are not, you don't shy away from that. Like you walk up to people and people leave knowing that you are for your people. You're an advocate. You're this. And she was like, I want to have that same type of drive. And I was like, holy crap. Like how can I, you know, tell her to choose between where she's going to be and show her pride, you know? And so that was a reality check for me. And I think, you know, with her growing and maturing, the safety is still there, but she's also, now that puberty's kicked in, she's not also not as talkative, right? She's kind of like just a little laid back and scoping things out and trying to see, like, do I even want to tell you my name? So I'm starting to feel a little bit more confident in her approach. Know that the boldness and the activism is in her because she is definitely a product of me. And I am that of my mother, who's also an activist. And we're in a good space. Texas scares the living crap out of me. Coming from the East Coast, you know, there's just so much fluidity there in those cities that we've lived in. While Houston is semi-progressive, we're in Texas, and there's just a constant, I wouldn't even say subtle anymore, reminder that we're in Texas and we're being faced with legislation and laws and rules that that will directly impact my family. I love Houston. I love Houston, the community that I've built. I see myself really planting roots here. But there's this fear of, you know, if things continue to go the way that they go with women's rights and voting and just all of these things that are coming to light now, you know, it might not be the best option for my family and my family's family. You know, when Blake wants to have kids or get married, you know, like Texas, who knows? I got married in D.C., right? And in Maryland, like these are places that are generally progressive, and we walk around very prideful. I can hold my wife's hand in the park and not feel anything about it. I wouldn't say that Houston prevents me from doing that, because I certainly will show affection, but I think twice about it. Mm-hmm. I think about do I want to be in this particular neighborhood doing that, right? Or who's around me first? Like, I'm considering all of those things. And right. I don't think any human being should have to live anywhere in this world and have to second guess or really think through how they want to show up for someone they love.
Right. I completely agree. I agree. And yet it's a hard place to be, right? I mean, and particularly as a parent too, it's hard. You want them to be safe. You want to protect them. And yet they have to have their own experiences. And we all have our bubbles within our communities, right? But if you stray out of that, I mean, even New Mexico, where I am, we've got more protections on paper for the queer community than any other state in the country. Mm-hmm. And yet we just had a non-binary person murdered in rural New Mexico 2 weeks ago. So it can, I mean, it's a shame that we are where we are right now, that people feel like, without getting too much in the weeds in politics, it's a shame where we are right now. It's a scary time to be different, to be, if you're not white and rich, you know, you could much, you're the minority. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What, but now you have your own organization for the people that you are doing now, which is it's an empowering thing that you're doing and so wonderful. Talk about that, where you are now with your organization.
Yeah, I think more now than ever, we as parents, we as just community members, we need to be aware of how technology relationships are impacting our children's minds. And so I started my research about 5 years ago on screen-based addiction amongst youth and adolescents. And what that simply means is that their engagement with screen time, whether that's gaming, social media, TV, has started to rewire their cognitive development, even at early ages, from 0 to 3 months. So when you're getting excited that your niece or nephew are swiping over to unlock your phone, or they're clicking on the Netflix button, there's things that are happening, both physically and mentally to their brains, to their eyes that we don't see. And my goal is not to shift them away from technology, but it's really to incite healthy relationships, to educate parents, counselors, and educators on the signs of overstimulation, and also provide them with some tools and resources to help kids basically become unaddicted from these devices. And so For the People is a grassroots organization that is centered in youth advocacy, youth voices, with pillars that are rooted in, you know, healthy relationships with technology. So we do old school things. We're at the garden, right? We're cleaning up our neighborhoods. We're doing a lot of Legos these days. Legos has made a comeback over the last 2 years. So we're building Legos, we're doing puzzles. And our goal is to increase critical thinking skills, as well as up our conflict resolution skills in our young people. Some of the things that you may just overlook is that our young people are losing social interaction skills, in-person social interaction skills. They don't look at you in the eye. They don't tell you their names with confidence. And so For the People was birthed out of me understanding that, one, I want to not only save my own child and her friends, but I want to change the world in the way in which we view how we interact with the technology that ultimately is here to help us. There's great benefit and value some of the technology that is coming out. But the same message that I leave with my kids and say, the person that created the internet didn't have it. So right. That is how big your brain is. Your brain can literally create these things to be. And we cannot allow what's in our hands or what's in front of us to really paralyze that. It's your superpower, and you have to protect it at all costs. And so that's what For the People is designed to do. And so we partner ourselves with organizations who already are doing the work. They have the community connections, and we just amplify the mission of community building. Our motto is that we build stronger communities together. So we work with all type of organizations that interact with youth, parents, and community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I commend you. That's such important work. And studies are just right now coming out on the downsides of all of this screen time, right? Mm-hmm. And it's been going on since, what, for 20-something, 30 yeah. years or whatever. And now we're seeing what those negative results are from all of that. And so thank you for the work that you're doing, because it's super important. It's super important to educate people and to help people, right, understand why there's so many other things. Get out and play, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. There's so many things you can do besides being looking at a tablet or a phone.
Yeah, watching other people play. That was the last year's study was looking at the efficacy of children that watches children.
Yes.
Like, unbox things, and they're playing games. And I'm like, what's happening here where you aren't doing the action, you would rather watch the action be done. And then the child that's doing the action isn't necessarily doing them for development. They're doing them to gain the viewers. And then it's the cycle of like not actually growing and navigating through what games were designed to do. And games were designed to build critical thinking skills.
Correct. Right. Right.
And so, you know, there's a lot behind that. I can talk all day about how the systems are created to do those things, because games nowadays don't even have endings. Like you don't actually win the game. It's more so you just unlock an infinity of levels to socially interact in this digital world. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, our primary solution is like getting our kids back in the street, start getting these agreements amongst parents and community members of my child not being the only child without a cell phone in middle school, because she is. Mm-hmm. Part of that is because of my research. The other part is because I've seen what it has done to her and for her. And since she's been out without a device for 19 months, she's taught herself Japanese, how to read it and write it by us going to the library. She's played the trumpet, the electric guitar, and the bass. She's just able to really think and yep. utilize the gift that is already in you. And it's not sedated by the noise of the algorithm, if you will. Yep. And so I get very passionate about it because the data is really scary. And I'm talking about a 13-year-old. It's even scarier for my babies. And we're thinking about what that looks like as far as them being slower to speak and their physical motor skills and what that looks like. I mean, it's just so many things. Their retina, most recently, I spoke at a workshop around eye exhaustion, 0 to 3. So when they're looking at, you know, YouTube for 30 minutes and their eyes are moving so rapidly to keep up, they're worn out. As adults, we know, go get blue light glasses, go get these protections so that if you're in front of a screen for a certain amount of time, it helps you, helps your eyes rest. Exactly. But we're not thinking about that from 0 to 3. We're saying, oh, that's so cute. He's so smart. He knows how to unlock my phone. And I want to say no. Red light, like, no.
Right.
Oh, no. So how much time is enough time? And it's like zero, like no time, no screen.
Right. So. I agree. Yeah, I agree. Hard challenges and hard things to learn. Yeah.
If people want to reach out to you to have you come in, so you go into schools, you go into nonprofits, you help people understand, then do they just go to your website?
Yes. So they go to my website. Or they can also shoot me a DM on Instagram. That's where most of my stuff comes from because people are on the internet.
Right.
Or they can send me an email at info@forthepeople.community. And so all of the avenues I'm able to help provide support. We have free resources online right now. A Reset, Rewire workshop that I've delivered with Restorative Houston, and I've done it with some churches. And again, we're about fun activity. It's activity-based. It's not a lecture. We understand that I'm a parent that is in grad school work, do organizational work, do all the things. So I know that it's easy to just hand off the tablet or the phone to get things done. I am by no means saying that you're wrong for doing it. I have done it. But what I am saying is that let me share some critical information just to get you to think about things a little differently. And if you can insert one analog game or engagement a day into your routine, you'll save your child's life in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the community, right?
Because in the community.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Unique, thank you so much for coming on and having this really wonderful, amazing conversation about your life and your daughter's life and life in Houston and what you're doing now to help facilitate learning better ways to communicate and explore life. So thank you. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me. This was great, and looking forward to staying connected.
Yeah, same here. All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Please keep supporting. If you'd like to share your story and talk about what you're doing, you can sign up on twoflowerproductions.com and click the Lip Service logo. We would love to speak to you. So thanks so much, everyone. Keep up the great work.
Hi, it's Pam here. Well, that's a wrap. If you enjoyed listening, please subscribe, like, and share. And if you happen to know someone that you think is struggling with coming out, please connect them to our website, lipservice.media, and they can message us and we'll do what we can to connect them with support services in that area that can help them. And if you can afford to, please donate through the donation tab on our website to help us keep up with the work we are doing. Your donations are tax deductible. Thanks so much again for listening. We appreciate you.
Produced by Audavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.